I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. What are we going to talk about today? Well, as I make my notes, you know, I go through the world happenings because I like to keep up on what's going on out in the world. And I see different personalities, different people, the political things going on, social trends, all the things we really need to pay attention to as American citizens. You know, what's going on with this pandemic? You know, should I take this vaccine? Should I let my family take this vaccine? Should I be concerned about the vaccine? You know, all things we need to talk about and discuss, because all of these things going on, political, social, financial, medical, all of these things have ramifications for each and every one of us and for our families. I would like to start, though, you know, the ability I have to do this radio program and to spend time with you, you know, every weekday at 3 p.m. and then where we find the show replayed on podcasts, all the podcast networks all the way around, and then played at different times on the station on the weekend so that we can connect. When I think about that, and I never, ever lose track of how lucky I am to have this opportunity for my voice to be heard, I have to go back and look at the roots of what this is. You know, the great Malcolm Out Loud has created an amazing station here in AmericaOutLoud.com. There are tremendous people on this station. There are points of view you won't find other places, you know, including Malcolm's. Malcolm has a very unique point of view. His programs are excellent. But there are so many other hosts on here that offer conversation. And where does that all come from? You know, what is this talk radio thing that we do? I know when I was a younger person, I did a lot of landscaping, and I would bring my radio with me everywhere. You know, because you'd set up and you'd start doing work, and to just sit there and just work was sometimes boring. Listening to music, I love music. I'm a guitar player myself. I love to play music, and I love to listen to music. But at the same time, it just was not that stimulating. You know, you listen to music and you hum along. It's kind of in the background. So I found talk radio. And I found talk radio really by accident, you know, flipping through the channels. You know, we had FM radio and you had AM radio. And AM radio, music-wise, was really mostly pop tunes, you know, popular culture tunes, you know, the top 40 hits, that kind of thing. And I was more of a rock and roll guy, Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith, you know, that kind of music. That's what I liked. So trying to get an FM station, sometimes you could, sometimes you couldn't. Well, I ended up on the AM band, and I'm flipping around, and I found Rush Limbaugh. And that's really what I want to spend a couple minutes talking about today. You know, we lost a great voice, a great American voice, when Rush passed away. Not even so much for talk radio, but for America. Rush was an amazing individual that brought humor to his depictions of things going on in the world, of politics and social customs and how we were changing and adapting to the new world as things, you know, as we became more enlightened. And Rush improperly has been labeled as a racist, a homophobe, all these other things. And I can only tell you, if that's what you think of Rush, it's because you never really listened to him. You know, I remember exactly where I was in August of 1988, because at that point I had been listening to talk radio for a while. And Bob Grant was on. And Bob Grant was a conservative guy. He was kind of abrasive, and that really was his shtick. You know, Bob would come out, "Get off my phone!" He would yell at people he didn't like, and he was kind of funny. But what I liked about Bob Grant was that when he had people on, people of consequence, you know, politicians that were in command of my state, or politicians who were big in our country, he didn't pull punches with them the way our media does today. He didn't ask softball questions of the ones he liked and then ask, you know, tough questions of the ones he didn't like. He asked everyone tough questions. You know, he got right to the point. He was intellectual. He was really smart. And that was the stimulation that I was seeking from radio, you know, mindlessly, you know, planting trees and stuff. I love that. You know, I was in law enforcement and I had a business on the side, landscaping. And what I liked about it was that the trees and the bushes didn't fight back. They didn't answer back. They didn't try and attack you. So I enjoyed communing with nature and planting and making something beautiful with a landscape. But I needed something else to stimulate my brain. And that's the talk radio. So I found Bob Grant. And I liked Bob Grant a lot. I called him a few times, you know, make a couple comments about whatever was going on, which really hooked me into the mode of talk radio. And then I'll never forget where I was. In my backyard, we had a bunch of pine trees, and we wanted to put in a pool, you know, an above ground pool for the kids. So I had to drop like 15 or 20 gigantic pine trees that were in our backyard to make way so we could put up this pool. So I knocked all these trees down and I was out there cutting them down. And now I had to take all those branches. I mean, you can imagine how many branches had to be dragged out to the front of the house, put out to the street, chopped up into bundles so that, you know, the town would come take them. And I had my talk radio going and I hear this song, brand new show. They announce a brand new show starting today, Rush Limbaugh. And I'm like, what the heck is a Rush Limbaugh? I mean, like, what kind of a name is Rush? I never heard, you know, a name like that before. But it was on the station that I liked. And all of a sudden you hear this music. Doom, doom, do 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 doom, do 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 doom, do 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 doom, which is a song called Going to Ohio by the Pretenders. And I heard that song, and I found it, okay, this is kind of, it reminded me of a, like, the vision I got when I heard that was this big elephant just walking along, right? And then here comes this voice, you know, this Rush Limbaugh, the very first show that he was on radio. And remember, I was already a talk radio fan. And this guy comes on, and, you know, when you listen to a station and you listen to talk radio, the hosts have a tendency to come and go. You know, they start real, some are really good, you like right away. Others, just not, you don't like them, you don't like the sound of their voice, whatever. Which is why I find amazing that people are tuning in such great numbers here to Chasing Justice. I'm hoping, I'm interesting. I'm hoping that I say things that interest you. I hope I stimulate your mind. This is not about me telling you what to think or whatever. It's me giving ideas. That's really what I think I do. But I get that from all the predecessors who came before me. And I remember listening to that first show with Rush Limbaugh, and he did one of those updates, one of the very first updates, you know, like a comedy routine. Here's the guy talking about serious stuff. He sounded friendly. He sounded nice enough. And then all of a sudden you hear tuttle-up, 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 which was supposed to be like, a, you know, like a drum roll or whatever that he did. But he did it with his own voice. And then he did one of his updates, where he would take some social thing going on and maybe not make a joke out of it, but present it in a way that was filled with humor, right? So he could take a serious thing that might be really hard for people to talk about, and when he infused it with humor, you could listen to it. And what he used to always say all the time was that he would use absurdity to present the absurd part of any point of view. So, yes, some of his stuff was way out there, and it was misinterpreted. You know, anybody that spends any time giving their opinion, whether it's in writing or whether it is here on a radio or on television or whatever, there's always an opportunity for you to be misinterpreted. You know, you say something, you could say a word wrong. You can choose the wrong word as you're trying to make your point clear. You know, a lot of times when you listen to me and I go round and round, you hear my stories, right? I go, we start in one point and I work my way around a big horn to come back where I wanted to be because I wanted to give background to my point of view. Well, that's my style. That's what I do. But I remember being so entertained by this Rush Limbaugh that I enjoyed his program and I listened to it the next day. And after a week or so, I found it, I was looking forward to it. You know, I was looking forward to that show. And then his intellect came through. And he would take a point of view or something that was going on, and he would explain it in such a way that made it crystal clear. And he would give me points to consider, right? And that's kind of my homage to Rush, is that he didn't tell me what to think. And this is what people who really didn't listen to him didn't understand. Russia did not have mind-numbed robots, as he would call everybody. He just presented information in a way, and then you make your decision. Do you agree with that or not agree with it? And that's really what I think I've taken a lot from him. You know, Bob Grant was a guy that I thought was brilliant and presented in a different way. I enjoyed listening to Bob because he didn't hold back. He didn't pull punches when he talked to people he liked or didn't like. So those two guys were probably the two most important people for me when it came to talk radio. As time went on, I got to enjoy Rush immensely and his morning updates. And he was a gentle man. I heard stories all the time about his kindness and his generosity. I mean, he's a guy that really came from a family that, you know, there were lawyers and this and that. And he makes a deal out of that, you know, he didn't go to college because he didn't want to waste his time. You know, he wanted to learn things on his own. And you can imagine in a family where they're all educated and attorneys and you have a child that says, no, I'm not going to go get educated. I'm going to go do my own thing. That would cause a lot of problems. And I'm sure it did for him because he talked about it, that his family didn't understand. His father didn't understand. But the secret to Rush was when you heard he took the wisdom of his father about why he should get educated. He talked about his mother, he talked about his brother, and he talked about the love of their family. And that was infused into him, the love of family, the love of God, and the love of country. And that is what came across. When Rush talked about a segment of our population, and people would say, oh, he's putting this group down, or he's attacking that group. No, he wasn't. He was trying to offer some information, some idea about a problem that was afflicting a particular group or an organization or a segment of our population. And he would try and offer an understanding of how to make it better in that group. He didn't hate anybody. You know, I listened to the man for over 30 years, right? And he brought a lot of fun radio, but his ideas and his concepts, there was no hate in Rush Limbaugh. There was not. He did not like hypocrisy. He did not like when people were not given a fair shake. He did not like when people were, I don't want to say tricked, but when people were used as pawns to make power for other people. You know, you tell a group, hey, listen, we're going to give you all this stuff. We're just, our friends on the left, they promise everything to everybody so that people will vote for them. Not that they care for those people, but they want their votes. They want to stay in power. They like the lifestyle. They like controlling things. You know, Republicans are the same way. They want to stay in power. They just have a different way of going about it. They say they're going to do all kinds of things that we want done as citizens, and they get elected, and then they never do it. They acquiesce. They give in. They back down. They don't fight. You know, and Rush brought all those, that conservative movement went from being, you know, the previous paradigm of it's big business, that's all Republicans are, is big business, brought it down to the man and woman around the kitchen table who was working every day and just wanted to take care of their family, and how conservatism and conservative values and conservative principles really are the bedrock of America. You know, our friends on the left, they have some good ideas because they come from emotion, they come from the heart, and the Republicans more came from, you know, action, from doing things that were real. You know, we want everyone to eat, right? Everyone has to eat. Everyone deserves to eat. No one should go hungry in our country. But the two different ways to get at it are, you know, tax everybody and then give everything away, or teach people how to get educated, teach people how to go to work, teach people how to make for themselves. The two different philosophies. And Rush really became, I guess, the ideological leader of the conservative movement. He could humanize what the media and those on the left that demonized conservative points of view. Conservatives don't hate anybody. Conservatives don't hate any particular group. They don't hate these people. They're not superior to anybody else. They're really not. They want the best for everyone, but they do believe everyone has to work for it. You know, we can't not just level the playing field. We can't just leave it at that. You know, our friends on the left want to make an equal outcome. which is not an American value. You know, they confuse the pursuit of happiness and everyone has an opportunity with it should all be the same for everyone. There should be nobody falling behind. I don't want anybody falling behind. Who wants anybody falling behind? I want all my neighbors to do well. I want everyone in our country to do well. But we can't go out and demand that we make it the same for everybody, because you know what? That's false. That's not real, and it can't survive. And Rush brought that understanding, I think, in a way that people could grasp it, and it softened it, it humanized it, and it really was the beginning of the modern conservative movement, which gave us tremendous years of Ronald Reagan as a politician brought those conservative values to life, which opened the door for more people, you know, the populism of Reagan, to see that, hey, this is pretty good, this conservatism, when it's actually done, when it's put in place. And Reagan was a fighter. And then along comes Rush Limbaugh, who understood that movement and could bring it to people in a way that was not threatening and was entertaining and was a lot of fun. So I listened to Rush for many, many years. I learned a lot from Rush. I learned also how to question things, how to break apart something somebody said and look behind their meanings. You know, it helped me in many ways to visualize who I was. Where do I fall in the area, the arena of ideas? You know, what makes sense to me? You know, I could compare and juxtapose ideas based on what I heard Rush talking about, how he took arguments apart. So I enjoyed it. When I was raising my kids when they were little, you know, kids take naps during the day, and I always like to, I like to cuddle up with the kids and help them, you know, take their nap. And it was a nice time to be together. We would tell a story, we would cuddle up, and then off they would go for their nap. And I was working all the time, so it was when I was home and I could do that, it was a way for me to connect with my kids. And it was funny, we would call it nap time with Uncle Rush. We would go in and turn on Rush's program, and the kids would start to go off to sleep, and I would be listening to Rush. It was my chance to take a break during the day, and it was funny. We joke about it today. My son Joe is an attorney. He's a brilliant man, great father, great husband, good, decent Christian man, and he talks about, you know, Uncle Rush, and that's what we call him around here, Uncle Rush. So last year, when Rush came out and told everyone he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, that was shocking. You know, that was shocking, and it felt like family. Now, I never met the man. I think I might have spoken to him once on the phone. I might have called in one time. But I didn't know him personally. But because you spend 30 years with someone, you know, and it's what we did for many, many days, 3 hours a day I would spend listening to Rush. And you made a connection to this person, and he became like family. So when he passed away last week, I know it was a very sad time for many, many people. And I wanted to use my microphone here to remember Rush Limbaugh and remember the great things he did for our country, because besides just being an entertaining radio guy, his ability to bring the conservative movement to the forefront and help us to move forward as a people, as a country, raise everybody's ships, was extremely important. And I want to thank Rush for all those hours of enjoyment, of listening, for the learning, for the fun, for the humor. And you will be missed, Mr. Rush Limbaugh. You've brought a good thing to the world, and I know lots of people agree with me. So that is our Chasing Justice tribute to the great, late Rush Limbaugh. I'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Chasing Justice with Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. You know, for all my friends out there, I know there's a lot of law enforcement people out there that listen to the show, and I appreciate that. There's our military friends out there. There's a lot of good Americans that just, give me the honor of spending their afternoons together. So I've written a book for our law enforcement friends out there, for corrections, police officers, anybody that has to interview people, right, to obtain confessions, admissions, to talk to witnesses, whatever it is you have to do. The book is called The Interview. The Interview. And it is the essence of what I did as a law enforcement investigator. It is the techniques that I developed over many, many years of doing that, where I was very successful, developed with me, my partners, and all the people I interacted with. So The Interview is available from the publisher, looseleaflaw.com, looseleaflaw.com. You can go in and get the book there. And you can also get it from amazon.com. So if you have a law enforcement officer in your family, if you have a young officer, you know, this is not just for detectives. I'm getting calls all the time. Is this just for detectives? No, this is for anyone who has to ask questions of anybody else. You know, so a new officer, this would benefit them their entire career. All right, so The Interview by Lieutenant Joe Pangaro on Amazon.com and on looseleaflaw.com. So I just want to pass that out there. All right, so where do we go here in round two? I was talking recently to the fellas in the neighborhood, you know, Jim the Contrarian, Giordano, Bill the Man of Faith Dallas, and Rock and Roll Race Car Jack Patterson. And we are itching to get back together personally. You know, we were going to do this Zoom thing, and it's really just not the same as us being in the room together. So we're really trying to get everybody back together, because they miss coming out and talking to everybody. And I miss hanging out with my buddies. You know, the pandemic is continuing. I mean, here we are almost a full year now of this mask and this restrictions. And are we any better off now? I mean, it seems every time we make a stride forward, there are things to hold us back. You know, it's getting better, it's getting better. Nope, now there's a wave, a new wave. It's getting better, it's getting better. Oh, now there's a variant. All right, so what are we doing? Well, there's a vaccine now, okay? There are several of them. And there's a couple concerns that I have. First of all, they're encouraging everyone to go get it. And the thought being, and it makes sense on its face, but here's how you have to decipher this. This is how I'm doing it. I don't know what you're doing, but here's how we're trying to decipher in our family here. Do we go and get it? Do we get the vaccine? Now, I've told everybody here, we have my father-in-law, Ted, who listens every single day to all the stages, all the shows on America Out Loud, but he especially listens here on Chasing Justice. Ted, how are you? You know, I know you're out there. So do we have Ted get the vaccine, get the shot? Well, I was recently listening to some people who were talking about, there was a doctor, and two PhDs that apparently had a lot of information about vaccines. They knew a lot about it. I don't. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a vaccine creator, and I'm not a medical person. I know through the course of my life, I've taken vaccines, right? When you're a little kid, you get the vaccine. I remember when there was a brand new one that we had to get in school. I was probably 10 or 11 years old. It was MMR, right? The rubella, mumps, and something. It was three shots in one, and we all went and got the shot. And a big air gun. We lined up at the firehouse, and they gave everybody the shot. And I remember when I was a kid, we got chicken pox. And all the neighbors' moms, so one of the kids would get chicken pox, and they would bring all the kids together to play. And then all the kids got chicken pox, and then everybody was, you know, not going to ever be infected with chicken pox again. It was an interesting early on experience with these vaccines. I remember going to the doctor to get shots, and then my own kids. You know, my own kids. Now it starts to come to my mind. Do we take these kids in to give them these shots? What is in these shots? All right. My cousin, he was older than me, but when he was a kid, he had polio. Right. I was born in the early 60s. He was born, I guess, in the early 50s when polio was still a thing. And he had a slight limp, you know, because it affected, I guess, the nerves and could affect your walking, your legs or whatever. But he had polio. Now, polio is something we don't really have anymore. Polio is not something that's around. TB, tuberculosis, was almost wiped out completely. But these diseases were knocked out because of vaccines, right? So they seem to work. I mean, how do we get rid of all these diseases that used to really afflict us if it wasn't for these vaccines? So I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not. I get it. I took my children to go and get their shots when they were little babies and throughout the course of their whole course of their lives, they had to go get their immunizations. As my kids went off to college, there's things they have to get. There is one that they ask for colleges that I can tell you was my daughter took it. They say that it's out there to prevent cancer that comes from sexually transmitted diseases. Well, I taught my daughter and all my, and my boys, you know, don't get involved with premarital sex. Now, oh my gosh, Lieutenant Joe, you are so old-fashioned. You are so stupid. Kids are going to do it anyway. Well, they may, but that doesn't mean you don't teach the right things just because people aren't going to do them. You know, you don't teach don't commit murder because, you know, people commit murders anyway, right? So we why would we talk about that? No, you talk about what's right and you hope that those lessons stick. So my daughter going off to college, we were convinced by everybody that when these kids go off to college, they got to get this particular shot, right? And then not the one for, the brain one that can kill you in 3 days. Of course, everybody wants the kids to have that. This was for a sexually transmitted disease because you get a cancer from it, cervical cancer, whatever. I just don't want to mention the name of it specifically. But she went and got the shot because we were told by everyone that it's the right thing to do. You know, it prevents cancer throughout their life. So I don't want my kids to get cancer. So I take my daughter in for the shot. She suffered for weeks and weeks and weeks with a reaction to that drug, to that vaccine. Now, when we researched it, we found out that lots of people have reactions that can last their entire lives. The doctor never told us that. The college that was insisting that she have this shot didn't tell us about any of that. We found out the hard way. We found out from people that getting that shot, some people have died from it. People have lifelong physical ailments from that. And it's something we have to be very cautious of. You know, you're dealing with the human body and you're putting things into it that change how the body functions or it forces the body to make antibodies or it reacts. It's not natural to put these things into us. But I know that they can have benefits. But there's also them side effects, right? I remember I had some kind of an infection, a sinus infection or something. And it was probably third or fourth one I had within a couple of years. I'm kind of prone to that. So I go to my doctor, who I trust implicitly, and he says, oh, I'm going to give you this antibiotic. And I said, okay. He goes, it's a broad-spectrum antibiotic. It wipes out lots and lots of bacteria, and it should really help you, you know, get you down the road of no more sinus infection. Okay, great. Well, he gave it to me. It was very effective, knocked out the sinus infection pretty good, didn't have a problem for a while. But I noticed about probably a month later, I noticed that my wrists were really sore. They were aching. Then it was my knees, my ankles, my shoulders, to the point that it wasn't debilitating, but it was something I was aware of every single day, all day long, that my wrists, ankles, shoulders were as sore as you could possibly, as though somebody had beat me with hammers, and now I'm sore. So it was really strange that I had that. So much so that I looked it up on the internet. And I said, listen, strange you know, soreness in muscles and arms and legs and all that kind of stuff. And I started reading, and they're like, well, there's certain kinds of antibiotics that can cause that kind of a situation. And I said, what do you mean can cause that kind of a situation? And I started looking up, and there was one particular kind of antibiotic that not just one person or two people, hundreds of people were on there saying, I took this thing and had the exact same symptoms that I had. You know, the soreness in the joints, in the wrists, in the ankles. And as I'm reading this, I'm getting really concerned because some people are saying, I had that antibiotic 4 years ago and the pain has not stopped. It's gotten worse. Other people had it 15 years ago. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I don't want to have this for the rest of my life. And what do you do about this? There's nothing you can do. That's how your body reacted to that antibiotic. It probably hurt the nerves in your joints and you may be stuck with it forever. Now, other people only had the pains for a few months, 6 months or a year. In my case, the pains started to subside to the point when I didn't notice them anymore. I'm going to say it was as long as 6 months. All of a sudden, it wasn't something that was on my mind every single day. And my wife says to me one day, hey, how's your wrists and everything? Is it still? And I said, you know what? I could still feel it's a little bit sore, but it's not like it was. And then before you know it, all the symptoms were gone. Now, whenever I go to a doctor, I have to remember to tell them because they don't always tell you. You know, you go to a doctor, you're sick, they're going to give you something. Maybe they give you a shot to help you. I have to tell them, do not give me this particular medicine, because what a horrible reaction I had. So what kind of reaction are we going to have to the vaccine for this COVID? You know, I don't know. The problem we have today is that they're not telling us the truth. So I was listening to these three people on a panel, and they were talking about it. And apparently, and I don't know if this stuff is 100% correct or not. You know, it depends on who's telling you. You know, I try to always be completely open with everybody. When I say I don't know something, I don't know it. I'm conjecturing. I'm thinking about it. But these three people were out there. One of them was a doctor, a medical doctor. And the other two were PhDs. And they were saying, well, first of all, the COVID vaccine is not really a vaccine. It doesn't meet the criteria of a vaccine. We know how fast it went, so all the normal testing that they would do on effects or whatever is not there. And we know people are having negative effects. You know, lots of people seem to be fine. You know, I know a lot of people, older people, younger people that have gotten the shot that are in the groups that are allowed to have the shots. They seem perfectly fine. But then we do know other people who are suffering ill effects from this. You know, you hear about it, but very quietly. Nobody wants to talk about it. So I don't know. Do we get the shot? Do I take my children and counsel them to go in and get this shot? Do I take my 87-year-old father-in-law that we love and care for? Do I take him and counsel him and say, you know, Ted, you really should get this shot because, you know, you're in that older population that can die from COVID? You know, I'm not really sure, and it's unfortunate that we don't get truth. We're not getting truth from people. You know, there was a rush to create this because we had to get out of the pandemic. You know, the world was shut down. So President Trump, I think he did the right thing by saying, let's speed this up. I think he showed the power of the private sector. You know, not the government. This would have taken 35 years to get a vaccine. But he got this vaccine in record time. The problem is getting something in record time, ignoring all of the safeguards. Is that the right thing to do? I mean, what if this has some effect down the road? Now, there's a doctor I spoke to that I trust, a smart guy. And I said, listen, here's my concerns. And he told me, he says, I got the shots. I said, you did? Why? He goes, well, here's what we do know. We don't know what COVID is going to do to people down the road, 5 years from now, 7 years from now. We don't know how, if you had COVID, the damage that you might have to your lungs, the long-term damage that this disease might cause. We do know the side effects that we see so far of the vaccine. And we know that there's some bad ones, some mild ones. But we also know that the COVID germ itself, the virus, can damage your lungs. And 10 years from now, 20 years from now, you could have no lung left, no lung capacity because you had this COVID. He said, so when I look at it that way, I compare the risks of both, the risks of having COVID and the risks of taking a vaccine that may have some side effects. He says, I'm going on the side of the vaccine because I don't know what that COVID's going to do to me down the road. The vaccine, I can have an immediate bad reaction, but other than that, it seems to be okay. So, you know, I'm trying to decide, what am I going to do? The other thing I'm looking at is apparently when you look at the vaccines and you look at the stuff on the ingredients list, there's things in there that even our doctors don't know what they are. I'm trying to think of what they called them, and I'm like I said, I'm not a medical doctor, but you know, you have the specific things that create the antibodies, and then you have all the add-ins. There's aluminum, there's chloral cyhydrate, there's all kinds of chemicals and different things in there that they use. There's also apparently aborted fetal tissue in some of these vaccines. You know, I guess that's a transmitter to transmit it to your cells. I don't know why they would use aborted fetal tissue. I don't know that I want that. I don't know if I want to participate in that. You know, so I'm just not really sure. And what they're saying is that it's not so much the thing that's going to create the antibodies as much as it is the other things that they're putting in there in the vaccine that can cause a problem. And we just don't know. We don't get, nobody's sitting down and go, let's take a look at this. You know, these doctors were saying that there are no studies at all anywhere that say the masks are effective, that wearing masks are effective in any way, shape, or form. So why are we wearing masks? I know if you go on any of the social media sites and you ask that question, you'll get banned because the government answer is masks are good and you will wear them. Now, is that a control thing or is that really for our health? We don't know because we're not even allowed to talk about it. You get shut down if you even talk about it, if you ask questions. Why would that be? Don't you think, you know, with all of these press conferences that all of these politicians do all the time about this COVID, don't you think they would have a panel of experts, and not their government experts that are paid to be mouthpieces for their point of view, but like get a wide range, get the doctors, the group of doctors that came out and said hydroxychloroquine was good and they were banned. Let's get some of them doctors. Let's get doctors that say masks are no good, are useless. And let's get some doctors that say masks are great. Put them on a panel and let them present their evidence to the American public. So these doctors I was listening to, they said there are no studies at all. Now that should be easy to find out, right? Is there a study, a credible study, that says the masks actually prevent the spread of COVID? Or is a mask just a placebo? Makes us all feel good, but doesn't really do anything. So that's the question. Are you going to take the vaccine? Are you concerned about the vaccine? I think we're all getting sick of wearing the masks, but I also think it's going to be hard to get away from the masks. Imagine if all of these people came out, the politicians, the doctors, and everybody said, you know what? We realize we probably overreacted with the whole mask thing. It's really not as effective as we thought. Everybody can take off their mask. Doesn't really help. There are people now that are so mentally wrapped around the idea of that mask, you know, the screaming Karens in the store, that when you don't have a mask on, they lose their mind. There are so many people like that that I don't know that they're going to be able to take the mask off even when these experts tell us it's time to take the mask off. I don't know. I don't know if they can actually do it. So this has really upset the apple cart of our whole country, and these are some things we need to consider. Do we take the vaccine? Do we reopen the schools? Apparently, schools should be open for the kids. Look at Florida. I had friends in Florida sending me pictures. They're all out. They're hugging each other. They're in the bars. They're having a great time. There's no big outbreak in Florida. Actually, Florida's lower than most other places. So if that's the truth, why are we not back out in the world taking precautions as we personally see fit? I don't know, my friends. This is something for all of us to think about as we go forward. This is Lieutenant Joe asking the questions on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. We'll be right back.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutLoud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
All right, I'm back here on Chasing Justice. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro telling you, hey, ask the questions, get the answers, try and figure things out. Where else do I want to go? I want to close up on this COVID thing a little bit because it is still affecting us so profoundly. Our kids, you know, the mental issues that are affecting people with this COVID. You know, where are we hearing about that? Isn't that a concern? I mean, what about people who are trying to struggle with drug abuse and now they're stuck in this nowhere place and they're back to using drugs and drug abuse is rampant and suicide is getting out of control and kids are depressed. You know, my son Jack is a brilliant young man. He's a senior in high school and he's going off to a very prestigious college. We're very proud of him because he earned it with his work ethic, with his intellect, and with his desire to do the best he possibly can. But I keep checking in with him. I'm working late in my office or in the studio here, and I'll go upstairs, it'll be 10 o'clock, and, you know, he's there in the kitchen getting a snack, you know, big, strong, growing boy having a snack at night. And I say, hey, Jack, how's everything going? Good, good, good. How are you and your friends hanging in there? Eh, you know, good. We're bored, you know. He has a girlfriend, you know, not super serious, but they're, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, high school sweethearts. And her parents are paranoid to death about the COVID and will only let her out one night a week. So one night a week, they get to go out and go get something to eat or, you know, spend time together, watch TV, movies and TVs at each other's house. But I just want to make sure he's okay because lots of young people are reacting very badly to this continued, never-ending disruption in our social patterns. You know, the ability to get together, go with your friends, and do things is really tough. So we keep asking Jack, I keep checking in with him, hey, are you okay? You know, I ask the question, are you feeling really depressed? Are you down? He goes, no, I'm not depressed. I'm just bored, and I'm hoping college is open in the fall because I'm looking forward to going, and I want to get on with my life. And so if you have young people, you know, you need to talk to them. You need to broach the question, check in on them, because lots of these young people are getting depressed, and depression is very scary. It's very quiet, and these young people are killing themselves. In Nevada, they had to open the school system because so many kids committed suicide. Now, there's a certain amount of kids every year that commit suicide. There's teenage suicide is a real problem. It's a real thing we need to pay attention to. But in this part of Nevada, they normally had 5 kids a year kill themselves. Well, they had 20 kids kill themselves in the past year, a 400% increase in the number of suicides. That is a screaming red flag we need to look at. So they decided, we better open the schools. The chances of getting COVID and killing these young people is very, very, very small. But the mental attack on not being together, not being able to play their sports, not being able to interact with their peers is worse. So therefore they're opening the schools. And I think we all need to get there. We need to open our schools. Start with the young ones. They don't really have much of a problem with this COVID. So let's get them back together. Let's start the functioning. All right. Along those lines, something pretty funny. Funny and sad, put it that way. Apparently, somewhere in California, there was a school board meeting. And like most school boards right now, they're not meeting in person. They're meeting on Zoom meetings or they're meeting on other platforms, whatever, other internet platforms to talk. They didn't realize that the microphones were live. And they were on there cursing, using very, very bad language. But several of the board members were complaining that the parents of these kids just want us to open the schools because they want their babysitters back, right? Really derogatory, nasty things for elected representatives to say about the people they represent. And it was all caught and it went live over the platform. So much so that I think four out of the 5 were actually making the comments, and the board president, who didn't make any negative comments, he came out after it was revealed this went live to lots of people, and he came out, made an apology, said it wasn't right, did the things that people said, and then he and the entire school board resigned, right? Because of what they said and did. And even the woman who said the most nastiest things, she came out and made an apology, but she resigned also. So this world that we're in is different for our young people. It's different for all of us. It's changed my business. It changed how I teach and train. I have to do everything online now because there's no in-person anything. So how long are we going to let this go on? You know, how long are we going to let this go on? Because the more we go on and acquiesce, the less control we're going to have of how we move our states forward to get out of this. So that's what I wanted to say about the COVID, and the thoughts that we're having there. Along that line, you know, Governor Cuomo in New York finds himself in a very difficult situation right now. He has the legacy of the Cuomo family. His father was the governor of New York for quite a long time, I think 3 terms, Mario Cuomo. He was a beloved governor of New York. He was a liberal, but he was not a crazy liberal. Andrew Cuomo seems a little further to the left than his father. He does a lot of, I believe he did the abortion up to the moment of birth bill. He's all about that kind of stuff. He's very far to the left. Well, apparently when COVID started taking off and he didn't know exactly what to do. And I got to give, you know, most of us had no idea. We were told, 15 days we had a lockdown to stop the spread, to flatten the curve so our hospitals wouldn't be overwhelmed. But here it is almost a year now, and we're still doing this stuff. But who knew? But nobody knew. So you can't blame people in the beginning guessing. We didn't know what this was. We didn't know where it came from. We didn't know what effects it had. We didn't know how bad. All we knew was a lot of people going to hospital and they were dying. And that was scary. So you have to take action. So I don't fault him for taking action. A decision he made, though, along the line, was he had to take all the elderly from nursing homes, and he made a decree that the nursing homes had to take these COVID patients in. So now you had these infected elderly people with this very transmittable disease that kills people, especially the elderly, and you put them in nursing homes. Well, we know now that probably 16,000 of our mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles, grandparents died in those nursing homes because they were forced to take COVID patients into the nursing homes. The problem here is that maybe it was a poor judgment. Maybe it was something he didn't understand. None of us, like I said, none of us understood. But when it came out that he did that, apparently he made his staff lie to the federal government because he thought there was a probe that the Justice Department was going to look at all those deaths and what he did. And they underreported by about half. They said about 8,000 people died. So from what I'm seeing in the reporting, it looks like anyone who was in a nursing home that got so sick that had to go to a hospital and then died in the hospital, they didn't count as a nursing home death. That was one way to get around that statistic. At the same time that he was ordering these people into the nursing homes, and again, I don't know if that was a good decision. Obviously, in hindsight, it was a very bad decision. But at the time, who knows what parameters he was using to make that decision to try and stop the spread. We're all trying to guess in the beginning. The problem is that he didn't come out and admit it, and now one of his aides has come out and said not only did he not admit it, they purposely withheld the information because they were afraid of a government probe. So that's kind of, what do we call that, right? Corrupting justice, right? They were doing a bad thing there. They were hindering an investigation. They were lying. They came out and the woman said that they lied. They hid the numbers. At the same time, President Trump provided them with a perfectly refurbished Javits Center in New York City that could hold thousands of people, right? They could have been cared for there. He brought in the big ship that they could have had, you know, thousands of people on, and they had very few people on there. And the word that came out is that they didn't want to use them because they didn't want to give Trump credit for it. I hope that that's really not what it was, but that's what's been said, that they didn't want to give Trump credit for solving the problem, so they ignored it. When politics sticks his head into something like this, it is It is beyond evil when politics makes that kind of a decision. So I don't know. And now what's happening to the governor in New York there is that apparently even his own party, there's a representative, Kim. Now, Andrew Cuomo has said that Kim is an enemy of his, that they don't like each other, that Kim would make up things and attack him. I don't know their true relationship. But this Kim is a Democrat, and he's come out and called for stripping Cuomo of his emergency powers as governor, which would render him completely ineffective going further. The Republicans have, of course, jumped on. This is, you know, a chance to go after Andrew Cuomo, who I'm sure they think he's probably a future presidential hopeful. And if they could wipe him out now, they don't have to deal with him going down the road, because he's a strong candidate. He's a strong speaker. He's well loved in New York. He has a great legacy of his family. So to get rid of him now is, something that they might want to do. But the reality is, now they're talking about not just stripping him of his COVID powers, but they're looking at maybe an impeachment, which would totally ruin his career or any going any further. Even though New York State doesn't have an impeachment rule, they're going to try and make one up. It's interesting to watch this turnaround in how, the lies that he told to protect himself so he wouldn't look bad. It wouldn't look bad like he made a bad decision, to not give Trump credit for anything. You know, when you start to combine all those things, all those ulterior motives, as opposed to how do we protect the population, keep everybody as safe as possible, help people get through this pandemic, that's what he should have been concerned with. But instead, apparently he was concerned with politics. And that concern with politics alone, when it removes you from your mission, your goal as a leader, Republican or Democrat, is where the corruption comes in, and that's where things go bad. And it looks now like he might suffer from that. He might get through this. He might get through it. I mean, he's a liberal in a liberal state with a liberal media. You know, they may decide to circle the wagons and not, basically ruin his career. We won't know. We'll have to see as time goes by. But that's another outfall of this whole COVID thing. How many of those people who died who didn't have to die? I don't know. But it's very, very sad that that happened. So let's look at some other places. You know, I spent too much time on the COVID. It's something we all need to be concerned about. But all these things come up, these political ramifications. How about energy independence? Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, did you like $2 a gallon gasoline, $2.05 gallon gasoline? When we have low energy costs in America, it fuels the economy. Because then every time you call the plumber because you need something done, part of the bill you're paying is he has to figure the fuel for his vehicle or her vehicle to get to your house to fix your plumbing, to do your pipe. That's part of the price you're going to pay. Every industry worries about fuel. Fuel fuels everything, so to speak. And when that price goes from $2 to $2.50 a gallon, it changes the economic engine that's going on. Now, $2 to $2.50, yeah, that's a little bit of a problem, but it's not huge. Going from $2.50 to $4, like we were at, $4, almost $5 a gallon for gasoline, this could be very, very detrimental to our country. It'll put us back to that exact same stagnant growth that we had in the Obama-Biden administration, you know, that 1%, 1.5%. You know, President Trump opened up the oil fields, he opened up drilling, he did the pipelines, and for the first time in how many, 80 years, America was energy independent. Energy independence means our economy can grow, everyone can get jobs, everyone has more money. You can buy houses, you can buy cars, you can feed your family, you can send people to college. The booming economy we saw under Donald Trump has been further damaged now by President Biden shutting down the pipeline, shutting down as much of the fracking as he can. He wants to go after the coal industry. We are now going to be net buyers of fuel. We're going to have to go buying it from the places where they hate us, we've been in these wars for years and years because we need that fuel. That's why we're involved there. When we don't have that need for that fuel, we don't have to be involved in those Middle East wars where our people get killed, blown up, lose their legs and arms and everything else, so that we can have the free flow of oil at market prices, right? Well, President Biden has brought us back to that now. We're back in the Iran deal, right, where they're going to get a nuclear weapon. Does anybody believe the Iranians are not working on a nuclear weapon? Are we that naive and foolish that it's better to just say, oh, we have a deal, they're not going to do it until they blow something up? Right? That's what's happening, right? These people that are negative in the world, evil in the world, and I don't mean the Iranian people. You know, they want a better life. They want to have a more democratic life. It's the leaders of the Iranian regime that are bent on power and destruction of those around them. They said they want to destroy Israel, push them into the ocean. They hate America, and we've just gone back into a deal with them where we know we can't trust them. We can't actually go inspect anything. They take us where they want us to go. See, oh, see, this factory is empty. Well, what about the one we heard in the desert? No, that's not real. We're not taking you there. It's BS, and it puts us on a dangerous track to, you know, terrorism. You open the borders, and there's going to be terrorists coming across the border. People are going to get back in here, and we're going to go back to where we were. I don't want to lament that. I just wanted to bring up the energy independence thing. And, you know, what I said before was elections have consequences. And it appears that by us electing Joe Biden, a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Congress, we have made decisions as a nation. Might not be ones I agree with or you agree with, but as a nation, we have made these decisions. We've decided that abortion up to the moment or even after birth is okay, that we're okay with that now because we voted for that. A slow economy, higher taxes, more regulation, and no energy independence. We've just voted for that. Iran making a nuclear bomb and threatening her neighbors and the stability of the world. We're okay with that because we voted for that. All of these things have consequences. And if that's what people voted for, that's what we're about to get. So we need to stay smart, stay sharp. We need to pay attention to what's going on out there in the world and think about it. Now, President Trump has said he's not going to go away. So let's look at that for a minute. We have a minute here before we have to end our time together for today. Trump says he is going to stay involved in politics. He's going to be a kingmaker. He's going to now apparently he's vetting candidates that are Make America Great, America First kind of candidates. He has refused to meet with some Republicans. Nikki Haley, I believe, who was an enemy of his, then a supporter. Now apparently he will not meet with her because he doesn't think she is Make America Great Again, good enough. I don't know what that's all about. But he's meeting with candidates that he's going to personally endorse and help and push. And he's going to want to turn over all these rhinos, get them out of the Republican Party, remove the liberal Democrats and replace them with MAGA type of Republicans so that we can move forward with that agenda again, go back to energy independence and, you know, all the things that he pushed in his America First agenda. Looks like he's probably going to be doing that. So we have to keep our eye open for that in the future because those who are against him are going to use everything they can to attack the man. All right, my friends in Chasing Justice Land, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Thank you very much for spending this afternoon together, and we will see you every weekday here at 3 p.m. on Chasing Justice, the America Out Loud Radio Network.